Welcome to another episode of the Photo Facts Podcast. I'm Jim Felder.
I'm Robert Trawick.
Hello, Jim.
Hey, Robert.
How are you doing? Hey, you know what? I muted the wrong one. We were just bragging to our guest about how awesome the Rodecaster Pro.
How awesome and easy
it was. And, this new update, I had to format the card before we got going because it stopped recording.
Yeah.
But as long as that button stays red, we're good to go.
That's good. I'm excited about this one. It's been a while. It's been a while, and I'm excited to have this guest on the show.
You know why I'm really excited? I'm really excited because I look up to this individual a lot. We have him on mute, so he can't say a damn thing right now, which is awesome. And there's a really good chance that there will be a reunion podcast next January.
Yes. Oh, yes. That is correct.
In Dallas, Texas, for a PPA's annual Imaging USA convention.
That's right, baby.
So you can sign up now, get those tickets inexpensively, come out to Dallas to see Jim Felder, Robert Trawick, and the other pairs of the East Coast podcasters from the photography world. I don't have that gravelly, sexy voice that our guest has.
Yeah.
So talking about that, what have you been doing this week? Anything good?
Just busy, man. I've been working it.
I've been working it. Let me tell you how my day went today. So I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and had to be on site at 8. At 8 o'clock.
I hate it when that happens.
And the guy, I'm gonna like nag on this guy because he doesn't listen to the podcast. He's not a photographer. He was just my.
Let's hope not.
Oh no, he's not a photographer.
Okay.
So, you know, I always run late.
Yes, always.
So I'm. I needed like coffee bad. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'm gonna stop in the Starbucks. So I sent him a text. I'm like, hey, run a few minutes late. I'm gonna run through and get some coffee. Can I get you anything? And he said, it's okay. I'm running behind too. Which I'm thinking, perfect. That's awesome, right? And I said, hey, what do you want? And I'll bring you a coffee. And his text surprised me. It says, "Vanilla skinny vanilla latte."
What's surprising about that?
It's a girly drink.
Oh, okay.
It's like a girly drink.
I wouldn't know. I don't drink coffee.
Oh, okay. Well, then that just got completely lost.
Yeah, it did.
But he's a pretty burly guy that deals with like aluminum sheet metal and stuff. And he's like, I need a skinny vanilla latte. And I'm like, what? So I pull up and I ask him, I'm like, hey, do you guys have a thing called a skinny vanilla latte? Oh, yes, sir. We sure do.
Oh, I've heard of that.
And I'm like, well, what is it? It's like, you know, sugar-free syrup with vanilla something. I mean, it's just like a totally girly drink.
Hmm.
And of course, he's like, can I get you anything? I'm like, yeah, I need a drink for me. So I need like a grande six-shot soy upside-down caramel macchiato. And they're like, is that in a venti cup? I'm like, no. I need it in a grande cup because otherwise I can't taste the damn coffee.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to have lots of coffee. You seem just completely
I'm just,
you don't care.
No, I could care less. no.
However, we'd like to say that the show is gently sponsored by our fine folks over at Castle Spirits.
Oh, yeah. I finished mine. Did you get more?
No, I didn't get more.
Okay.
I'm a lightweight.
I downed mine.
Well, that's because you're an alcoholic.
No, I'm not. I think that it's the other way around.
There is. Okay, well, that intro really just, like, sucked. I'm going to go ahead and unmute our guest.
Okay, so our guest has been on the show twice.
Twice.
By himself and with his...
In person, but he's been mentioned on the show thousands of times.
Oh, yeah, thousands of times. Yeah. But he's been on the show once back in the day when we first started doing Imaging USA interviews.
2016.
Yes, and then he was on the show with his co-host.
His co-host?
But we were talking about Mr.
What's that guy's name? The co-host?
I don't know. I can't remember his name. It escapes me.
Anyway, escapes me.
Mr. Bouray Perry, welcome to the Photo Facts Podcast.
Hey, 2016. I think I was on this show before that.
No.
Because I was on this show the first time I spoke at Imaging USA, and I've spoken at Imaging USA 5 times in the last 6 years. So that would have been 6 years ago. So I think it was like 2014.
Now you're going to make Jim look it up.
I'm going to look it up, but that's okay. Yeah. It's all good.
You know what we should do? Okay, so I have a on our to-do list, we have to update the website with the blast from the past. We're going to go back and find Bouray's first episode on the podcast.
Right.
And we will put them on there.
Yeah, let's do that.
I just want to point out, did you notice how slyly I just slid in there that I spoke at Imaging USA five times in the last 6 years, like it was important to the story in some way?
Oh, no, no. It's very important to the story because we were pitching that earlier before, too.
like that somehow was going to lead us to the answer when really I just wanted to point out that I've spoken five times in 6 years.
Yeah, if they don't know that.
I don't remember the first time I spoke at Imaging USA, but I do know that fact, and that's why I know it should have been 6 years ago.
Wow, six times. So how do you get to be a speaker at Imaging USA?
It's all who you know and who you're prepared to grease.
Oh, okay. So I have to grease Gary?
No.
Oh, that's his name.
No, I've spoken to Imaging USA quite a bit, but partly because of my affiliation with Miller's Lab, my sponsor Miller's.
Oh,
and
yes.
Miller's is like a platinum sponsor for PPA. And so if you have a sponsor that's willing to pay for you to speak there, then PPA is much more out, you know, let you speak because they don't have to pay you. The sponsor will pay you.
So you are a counselor.
Yes, I am counselor. And who's a counselor besides you? Both, one of you guys counselor? Both of you?
No, God, no.
You're funny.
No, not even close. We're just
PPA. You act like you couldn't be a counselor. Anybody can be a counselor.
Thank you. Thank you for that, counselor. That was really good. You know, maybe we should become a counselor, Jim.
Well, I don't even know what that is, what it means.
I think you have to be voted by your state people.
Yeah, but you have to actually compete and have some kind of a certification, right?
No. The counselors of the PPA are basically the House of Representatives of the PPA. Each state elects a number of counselors to represent them based on the number of members of PPA who reside in the state.
Right.
And then you don't have to do anything. You go once a year to Imaging USA, there's a counselors meeting and there's a big meeting. And like, if there are any, that's where you elect the board of directors. If there are going to be changes and stuff to the bylaws, it has to be approved by the counselors. The counselors only meet once a year, but all the really important things have to go through the counselors. The counselors have the power. If we wanted to, we could vote to dissolve the PPA.
I think I heard that on one of their episodes for the Photobomb podcast.
Yeah,
I think that's amazing.
And many of the members of the board of directors were counselors, and they still are. Actually, if you're on the board of directors, you're still considered a counselor.
Wow. You know, Jim, we should make that our next year's goal, is become a counselor.
But you have to travel to those meetings though, right?
You have to go to Imaging USA.
One.
Imaging.
It's one.
Yeah, it's one. Imaging USA.
That's it.
That's all.
Just one.
And it's easy to, because they send the thing out every year that says, you know, nominations are open or whatever for counselor, and it directs you to a website, and then you can put in, I'm going to nominate this person, or you can nominate yourself, and then all the members get this email, and then you just go to the website and you vote. And so, like, and you're from Texas, so that's going to be, well, Oklahoma, right? Texas and Oklahoma, or just Oklahoma?
Just Oklahoma.
Okay, so I don't know how many counselors you guys have.
Probably,
this might make it tougher.
Probably,
but like
one.
In Florida, we have like seven or nine in Florida. Wow.
So you have a lot of retirees.
It's easier
down there.
Because there's so many of them that, you know, somebody dies and there you go.
Wow, we should try and do that. You know, talking about the PPA, I was actually talking to Jim about this the other day. They have really stepped up with that new website.
They have. That's the board of directors. You have the board of directors to thank for that. The website was just redesigned not that long ago. Mm-hmm. And after just a few years, the board of directors was looking at it and they said, you know, we don't think it's easy to navigate. It's not easy enough to find the things that you want. And something that I had also been saying, that which I had nothing to do with it, but many people had said this too, is if you're going to go to a website for the Professional Photographer Association of America, the first thing you should see is a photograph.
That's
like a
yes.
good photograph, you know. So let's get the photography out there in front, just aesthetically. And yeah, I think it's beautiful.
Oh, I think it's awesome. It works so much better on mobile as well.
Yeah, great. It's such an easily navigatable website. You know, it's easy to find stuff. Oh my gosh, I just love it.
I would say it's easier because I still have a hard time finding things. You know, what I was looking for the other day, it was the new logos. I need to change the logos on my website. And I was having a very hard time finding it. It was actually under my benefits.
Okay. I can see
you know,
that.
It's just tough to, it's, there's so much stuff the PPA has. It's got to be tough to figure out what's going to go where.
Yeah.
What I like is just, you can just go and instantly go to like my benefit, go to the section that's your section.
Mm-hmm.
And usually almost anything I need is going to be there. I need a merit report. It's there. I need bylaws and minutes. It's there. I need to know rules. They're there. You know, everything's under my name. So that makes it easier for me. I don't have to do much else searching.
Wow. Well, okay. So let's just dive into the conversation about weddings. So Bouray Perry is a wedding photographer based out of Florida. And we had this this conversation the other day talking directly about you. And I have a question for you in the sense, do you believe that wedding photography overall is still a viable source of income for photographers?
Oh, absolutely. It's in many ways, it's the most viable source for photography. That's why I'm a wedding photographer. Well, it's one of the reasons. Oh, yeah. Yeah. If someone came to me and said, I want to make a living as a photographer, what type of photography should I do? I'd be like, weddings. Do weddings.
Really? Because I feel that profit margin-wise, I can do better shooting families than doing weddings.
Can you?
I think so. I mean, now, obviously, it's going to be a volume versus one.
Yep.
But, you know, several years ago, it's probably been about 7 years ago, so this may have changed, but my average wedding, and I actually tracked all of my time with phone calls, emails, editing, shooting, everything related to a wedding was an average of 60 hours.
Okay.
And at a $2,500 wedding, that wasn't a lot of profit.
Well, it was profit, but it was a low hourly rate is what you're saying.
Right,
you're
exactly.
Working too much for the money that you're making.
Correct.
Your expenses weren't worse than being portraits, but your time in was worse. Right,
the time in. I think all the time, the editing, having to deal with it. And, you know, we haven't had any, like, bad weddings. I mean, we meet with all of our clients ahead of time. So if there's going to be a red flag, it's going to pop up in one or two of the meetings that we do before we even shoot the wedding. And that really hasn't happened because I'm kind of an oddball. So I don't get picked for the tuxedo weddings and very nice ones. I get picked for the crazy redneck backwoods weddings that there's going to be a lot of drinking at.
No.
But, you know, so I was thinking about, like, your wedding business is basically on the beach.
Used to be, yeah. Not as much now as it used to be.
Not as much as it used to be.
No.
And Jim, and of course, this is kind of going along with the whole thing of Bouray and Gary, because you guys don't know that we admire the hell out of you. Like, we constantly are talking about what's Bouray and Gary doing.
I
like,
can't,
seriously, we have bracelets that say, what would Bouray do?
Seriously, okay,
he's not
you're saying this, but I guarantee you Jim would not back this up.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, here's the thing. I just don't stalk you the way Jim does. I like kind of dial it back a little bit, but Jim will constantly say,
hey, well, it's because I listen. I'm a very loyal listener. I mean, I think that's the only podcast I listen to right now. I'm being
compliment.
Honest.
Thank you very much.
Totally honest. I've
been dealing with this. I feel like I've been dealing with this a lot. You're not going to believe it. This is the third podcast I've done today.
What? Oh, really? Wow. Yeah.
I was on another podcast, and then Gary and I recorded our podcast, which is called Photobomb, and it's available anywhere podcasts can be found. But
I like how smooth he is. He's smoother than this.
But I had to deal with this earlier today. I talked about this in great detail in the other podcast that I was on. And I don't understand that. So can you enlighten me why we are the only photography podcast that you listen to?
For me, you guys, I consider you friends and I consider you great podcasters. I mean, you guys are smart. You're funny. It's a great chemistry. I don't know. I'm throwing stuff out, but I just enjoy it. And the other ones, I try to listen to other ones and either too boring or they're, I don't know. Like I try to listen to the, when I can, the girl, the chicks, you know, the girls, the wedding.
I love it. How he's doing all these hand
motions. Yeah.
Yes.
So what is the wedding?
Secret Life of Wedding.
Yeah. I listen to that one too. That's the other one that I listen to sometimes, but, you know, I don't have time.
Let me interject something
lot.
Real quick, though.
Yeah.
I just realized I forgot to hit record.
That's okay. You're
it's
good.
Okay.
Don't
it's
worry
all
about
good.
It. It's all good.
Oh, and
but now my audio is not going to be as good.
That's okay.
Actually, your audio is going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, we don't. This is how we this is how we go anyway.
Well, okay.
So you listen to us for all these reasons. Okay.
So let me interject in there, because I feel that a lot of the podcasts about photography are very structured. It's almost like programming, and yours isn't programming. Even though you may have a format that you're following with your photography news, I feel it's more of a conversation. So it's a lot more relaxed. It's easy to listen to. There's some comedy, some dark comedy, some highs and lows, and it's what photographers go through. Photographers, I believe, as a whole, are solitary entrepreneurs. You know, we crave attention with other photographers, and we don't get it because we're up late at night editing, doing different things, and your podcast provides us a tangible outlet for the need to connect.
And it's also from another point of view, another state, another, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not just Oklahoma, because we've got our little tribe thing going on here, but it's, you know, it's Bure and Gary. I mean, hell.
It's Bure Gary. And your name is amazing. So Bure Perry, it sounds like a detective back in the 30s.
Okay.
I'm Bure Perry.
So go ahead, awesome. Bure. Go ahead, Bure. You were going to say something.
Yes, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's wonderful that you guys feel that way, and we certainly appreciate you listening to us. But it also strikes a little bit about Gary and I had a long discussion about this recently, about how the show has changed over the years. And like you said, oh, you know, and it's a fellow photographer, and you understand that at least half of our show we will not mention photography at all. Oh,
absolutely,
yeah.
And then we just do photography news. We stopped having guests on the show a while ago.
Yeah.
And we talk about that, you know, wow, we're a photography podcast, and shouldn't we have guests and everything? And this is 100% usually because of me. I mean, Gary agrees with me, but I think about stuff like this more than Gary does because of my background. But I believe that there's two types of people who do anything, be it a podcast or a television show or anything like that. And you can be one of two types. You can be Letterman or you can be Leno. And if you're Leno, you're going to have broad mass appeal, and you're going to do the formula, and you're going to do it well, and you're going to have a lot of people who like you. And if you're Letterman, you're going to be cranky, and you're going to be bitter, and you're going to be unpredictable, and you are going to be interesting as a person. And you're going to find people who hate you and people who love you, and you won't have as many people who like you as the people who like Leno. But the people who do like you, they're going to love you.
Oh. Right?
They're going to listen to you because they want to hear what you have to say. They're interested in you. That's why we stopped having guests. And everyone has to decide for themselves what they want to be, right? And this even translates to photography to some extent. You have to decide what you want to be. And personally, I spent my entire life as a disc jockey trying to be Leno. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the very end of my career when I realized that I didn't want to be Leno. I really wanted to be Letterman. So when Gary came to me and said, let's do a podcast, I said, okay, fine, but there's some ground rules. And one of them was, we're never going to do what we do based on whether or not it will be popular.
Yes.
And that served us very well.
Yeah.
We've had very good success with it, you know, and every time we talk to somebody and they say, we love your show, and I say, why? They never say, oh, because I learned about how to shoot with shallow depth of field, or because I love that guest you had. You know, it's always us. They like us.
Yeah.
And I would rather have 10 listeners like that than 100 listeners who just think I'm really good at giving interviews.
Right. God, you know what? Yeah. That really, like, makes me think, Jim. You know what I just discovered?
That's why we don't have a lot of interaction in our...
Nobody likes us.
Right. That's right.
And you know true. What? So I think you guys do the same thing.
We don't
you know,
care.
No. Yeah, but you start off your show, and it's what are you doing and what's going on, and you know, you chit-chat. I'm a firm believer that an audience needs to like the interviewer. You know, I was interviewed... You guys know Jed, the guy who does the Conversation podcast for White House Custom Color?
Yes,
I don't.
Yeah, he interviewed you guys. Yeah,
Jed is a great interviewer, just an incredible interviewer, and his is the only podcast I've ever actually reached out to and said I would like to be on your podcast, and because I wanted to be interviewed by him, he will get you on the show, And he's like Barbara Walters. He'll get you on the show, and then 10 minutes in, he's got you telling the deepest, darkest secret and crying on the air. You know, he's so good at just asking you questions and waiting for you to answer the question. He's really good at it. So I was on his show today. It was the second time I was on a show. And I was on a show today, and I made it a point to flip it back on him and start asking him the questions and forcing him to talk about himself and reveal more about himself. And later when he asked me about it, why did you do that? I said, because the audience really likes you. They're not listening to the podcast to hear me. They're listening to the podcast to hear you every week. And the same thing is true of you guys. People don't listen to your podcast because they want great photography tips. They listen because they like Robert and Jim.
They listen to us because we interview people that are more interesting than us.
That's right.
That's why we're having you on the podcast.
Wrong. That's so where you're wrong. No one's more interesting than you.
Oh, God.
Well, okay.
I mean, I don't mean you particularly. I mean anybody.
So he doesn't mean you as in us.
More interesting than you. The audience doesn't even know who I am, but they know you.
Oh, they do know you.
Because they like you, you know. So they want to hear what you have to say.
We mention your name a lot. Like you are probably. So
Boo Ray and Gary.
So here's the names. So we have Boo Ray and Gary. Mm-hmm. We have Alex Dugan. That gets mentioned a lot.
Yeah.
Don Hamilton.
Right.
Anything to do with Fuji.
Right.
Because they fit our hands properly.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. We should probably wrap it up.
I don't name drop anybody. I don't know anybody. Gary knows everybody. I know no one. I get introduced to people, but I never remember their names. And I don't do that. I don't follow other photographers. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't listen to other podcasts, really. I just decided I didn't want to do. I spent my whole life trying to manufacture something, a persona or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then when I retired from that business and became a photographer, I didn't have to do that anymore. I decided I'm going to be myself. And then when we started doing the podcast, it was the same way. I'm like, I'm just going to be me. They like me great. And if they don't, fine. But what I'm not going to do is do this and not enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We do it because we love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you love it, then that's it. That's all you need.
Yeah. We've been doing it for what? 8 years now?
9 years.
9 years.
You guys are like the veteran. You're the first photography podcast I ever remember hearing about.
What? Oh, really?
Yeah. You must not be doing photography for a long time.
Well, he hasn't been listening to very many
podcasts. That's true. But you know what? I want to turn this back on Mr. Bure because I know that he was a DJ. We've talked to him before on the podcast. I'm not going to sit here and get into the whole thing of like how you got started in photography and what camera you used. But what I am interested in, Bure, is when you chose to do photography, what is it that you enjoy the most about it?
I'm a big fan of not setting an alarm to wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
That's a joke, but it's really not. I am a big fan of going to bed at night and not having to get up at a particular time, even though I'm going to get up early. Just knowing that I don't have to get up early is a wonderful sense of joy for me. So that's one of the things I love about photography. I love that you get to make your own hours. I love that you get to be your own boss. You know, I never really answered. I felt like we're going to the second question. I never really answered the first question, which was about are weddings a viable thing?
Right.
And I'm going to say, yes, they are. And the reason is not everybody needs a portrait of their family, but everyone getting married needs a wedding photographer. And that's why weddings are a built-in market for you. You've got to market to people if you're going to do portraits. You've got to find your audience. You've got to find your portrait work. You've got to figure out how to connect with them. You've got to figure out how to convince them that they need this art for their walls and that you're the person to make that art and that they should pay you this much money. If you're a wedding photographer, all you have to do is just open the door because everybody's getting married and they're all looking for a photographer. So all you have to do is be a good one and then be able to sell yourself and they'll come to you.
You're exactly right.
That's the answer to the first question.
Because weddings are just event photography, you know, in my book.
Yeah, I do as many bar mitzvahs now. I do almost as many bar mitzvahs as I do weddings. And it's the same job.
Yep.
You know, we did have a question about that because you mentioned the bar mitzvahs a lot.
Oh, yeah.
What is the difference?
Wait a minute. Did I answer the second question? Because if I'm a listener, I get annoyed if the person doesn't answer the question.
No. You're going to get very annoyed today because we have too many questions.
Wait, the second question, the one you just asked me was, what was the one you just asked me? Oh, what's my favorite part of photography?
Yes.
You just said it. Not said
no, that's not, I mean, technically true. Why? I mean, there's lots of jobs where you don't have to get up in the morning. I like that it's creative. The same thing everyone likes about photography. I've spent most of my career in a job that that was in some way creative. And so it's hard for me. It would be hard for me to be in a job where I just came to work and worked on a spreadsheet all day.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's fair. Not the question that I
was... Not the answer.
Not the answer that I was thinking you would give.
Oh, okay. What do you think you would have given?
I don't think it would have been a very deep response, but I think that Boo Ray is a people pleaser. And he likes... People pleaser. I think that he...
I think we all are.
I think he enjoys the reaction of the people when he takes those once-in-a-lifetime images on the beach or the wedding, and he enjoys that happiness, and he wants to be a part of it.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Yeah.
But I know I do. I know I do.
I absolutely crave attention and validation. Who doesn't?
Well, I mean, who doesn't?
But yeah, I mean, I like that. But I really like the creative side of it. I mean, I like... Yeah, and I like picking over my own work, you know, like I'm not doing it so much now, but I used to play golf. When I played golf, I would be obsessive about it, trying to work on every bit of my game to try and get a little bit better. That was that personal feeling of improving yourself and picking it apart. And that's what we do as photographers, right? You come home and you look at your pictures and then it's okay. You know, on this one, I should have done this. I should have corrected that hand and the foot is wrong over here. And the light could have been a little bit, you know, I enjoy that process too. I enjoy picking apart what I did wrong and figuring out how to do better. And then I feel better about myself when I do that. And so there's a lot of personal growth involved with being a photographer. It never stops. You know, I mean, a lot of other jobs aren't that way. If you're a plumber, you're going to reach a point where you're just a good plumber and there's not a whole lot to learn anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
If you're a photographer, you might reach that point, but it's going to take a long time, a lot longer than being a plumber.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, if you're a photographer, less likely that you're going to end up having to clean up a bathtub full of poo.
Yeah. Or poop on the floor.
Probably less likely, but not zero.
Yeah. It's not zero. That could happen.
That could happen. You know, we could bring up those horror stories of sliding the pickle bucket underneath the bride's dress because she can't make it to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
The pickle bucket.
Yeah, like the 5 gallon.
Like an actual pickle bucket. Like this is like you keep a pickle bucket in the car?
No, but most,
event venues.
Event venues have a pickle bucket. You know, it's a 5 gallon pickle bucket or a 5 gallon plastic bucket that they keep stuff in. And you're like, hey, I need to borrow that because the bride is sick and she's throwing up. And then you just
have you ever taken a picture of a bride in her dress going to the bathroom in a regular bathroom?
I have.
Yeah,
indeed.
So have I.
But I
asked
not
that question because I bet almost anybody who shot a lot of weddings will go, oh yeah, I have. Because they'll ask you to, because they think it's funny. They'll be like the bride and 4 bridesmaids in there to hold the dress. And they're like, come take a picture of this.
Oh yeah. And you know what? The dress always gets caught on the toilet paper holder when they come out.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're trying to lift it up, and it's in the side of the stalls, because most of the time they're in the stall.
Oh, yes.
And then when they come out, it catches on the toilet paper, and you can hear a little rip, and it's like, oh, toilet paper holder. So that's always a bad thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not sure how good I'm doing at interviewing skills right now, but there's so many questions in my mind to ask Boo Ray.
All right.
Okay.
And
I'm an open book.
And an open book, you know, given the audience that we have, which is a pretty wide variety, but most of them are new photographers and upcoming aspiring pros, what would a new photographer or someone that's interested in getting to wedding photography, what direction or education or gear would you advise them to focus on? I know a lot of people get very gear focused, but you know, what would be the minimum stuff they need to do some decent wedding photography, and what should they look for to be a good wedding photographer?
Okay, that's a tricky question because it depends on what kind of wedding photographer you want to be. You know, there's no hardcore right answer because, you know, there's wedding photographers out there that shoot the whole wedding with one camera and one lens, you know, and all natural light. That's their style. So really what it's about is figuring out what your style is and then getting the equipment that's necessary to give, you know, to execute your vision. So what equipment you need, it's really up to your style. But if you ask me what equipment you should get, whatever you get, what's important to do is to prepare for the worst. So have backup equipment to everything that you carry. That's like the single biggest mistake that I think new photographers make is that they just don't understand how important it is to have backup. How important it is to have that insurance policy. You need a backup camera. You need backup lenses. You need backup flashes. You need a liability insurance. You need your cards being written to two cards, and you need those two cards being backed up to 2 drives. Yeah, you know, you boom, 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 boom. Because you blow a wedding, and that's a Google review you may never come back from.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also, you know, having backup doesn't have to be an identical copy of your camera. It could be any other.
My backup camera is not as good as my main camera, but it's a camera I used for years. And if I had to shoot a wedding with it, I could still pull it off. No problem.
Right.
Not quite as good, but it doesn't have to be. No, it doesn't have to be the same camera. Matter of fact, I knew a few people who did have that. They were like, "Oh, I've got the 5D Mark III, and then my backup the 5D Mark III." And I was like, "Ooh, aren't you special with the twin 5D Mark III with the other 5D Mark III just sitting in the case?" And my main camera is the 3, and my backup's the 2 that I was using before I upgraded.
Well, it's crazy that I say that, because it doesn't have to be that way, but my two systems are exactly that. I have two
identical cameras.
Yeah, I have two Nikon D750s.
He's always been that way.
Yes, two Nikon D750s and two Fuji XT3s.
So, now, did you you have two kits?
Yeah, because I'm in the process.
Let's go down this road, because I think Bu-Ray would enjoy this. Our audience. I just want, because our audience has a lot of Fuji users.
Yeah.
Bu-Ray has got an excellent YouTube channel where he talks about his F100 F100.
I talk about the X100F, but that's about to change because the V is shipping as we record this, so it will arrive. It'll arrive this week.
Oh, well, sweet. But it may be broke, and the other sent it back.
Yeah, it was broke. The first one that got to me was broke. I sent it back.
All right, so go ahead.
So
in there.
Basically, I wanted to go a lighter system. I wanted to go mirrorless, and, you know, because I shoot a lot of events, and the Nikons were getting heavy with the 7200 and all that stuff. And I'm in the process of going all Fuji. But the only reason that's holding me up is the awesome Nikon D750 built-in Wi-Fi. That is the best Wi-Fi on any of the Nikons that I've experienced.
Yes, but why?
For headshots.
Yeah, for doing headshots to your...
To my iPad.
To his iPad.
Direct to the iPad. I have turn on the Wi-Fi on the Nikon. It becomes a hotspot, and the iPad sees it, and I shoot to Shutter Snitch, and it's a beautiful, beautiful
It's a beautiful
marriage.
Workflow.
Yeah. And then the Fuji is not there yet, so...
But the Fuji will do an extremely excellent job with the cable to capture one in a laptop.
Yeah, but I don't like cables. I like being free.
Bu-Ray, just jump in anytime.
What?
Jump in anytime.
Oh, no, I'm listening. No, I'm enjoying this. Well, and this I'm a guy who shoots Canon and is always thinking about switching to Fuji, and so this is fantastic information. When I shoot tethered, I shoot tethered to a laptop, and then the laptop uploads to a system that I got from Gary that then puts it on a tablet where the clients can just pick their image right there and have it emailed directly to them. That's if I'm doing, like, volume headshots at an event.
Oh,
are you using Capture One?
I'm using what?
Is it Capture One?
No, Lightroom last time I did it. And then if I'm shooting studio or on location with headshots and I want them to pick on location, I guess I download an app for my tablet and I just tether straight to the tablet. And then when I shoot, I can just bring the pictures up on the tablet right there and say, okay, let's look at them. Which one do you like? This one? Great. Thank you.
Which
and then
tablet?
You don't have to do that thing where you send them all back to the office the next day and wait for them to come back with their picks.
Right.
And pick them right there on site and then you're done.
That's exactly why I use that Wi-Fi to the iPad, cause for that very reason. They choose them right then. And it's so much more efficient because, like you just said, you don't have to wait on them to, you know, choose their favorite.
Right, but I'm still in that system because you and I have both used a similar system with the Cam Ranger. The downside to this is that we're seeing a JPEG version of the RAW. We still have to go import the RAW photos from the Fuji or the Nikon, match up what they selected in Lightroom or Capture One so that we can edit the file they selected. I want to be able to go from my Fuji to an iPad RAW, have them select it, come home, sync up to my computer, and be able to edit and not have to worry about which one they picked and have them do that kind of stuff.
With the Nikon, the issue is the naming thing currently with Fuji. But the Nikon, in this app, it's called Shutter Snitch. Star rate or color rate or whatever, that image, those are the ones that I can select those and send a selection list to my computer. I copy and paste that into Lightroom via the plugin they have for this app, and it rates the raw images all.
I think we need to like pass this on to Blu-ray because I don't think he's aware of this.
You don't think I'm what?
Aware of this issue. The issue.
Okay, so we can't get an exact answer yet.
I'm close.
Okay. It appears, at least in my testing, that as soon as you tether your Fuji, even if it's via cable, it will change the name of the file on import.
Yeah.
Oh, that would annoy me. That would really annoy me.
Yeah, you can't.
I just name them. They're just numerical, but still.
Yeah.
Right, but it'll actually change the numerical order.
So you can't match up the raw to the selection.
So then even if they pick it, they're picking it by a name that's not going to exist for you when you pull the raw?
That's correct.
Oh, that's a nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. So I talked to a guy at Fuji, and I've talked to the developer for the shutter snitch thing, and it's been an issue, and they know about it. It's just something to do with the SDK.
It's the wireless transfer.
They've got it fixed on the wired, but not the wireless.
Correct. So if you use the Fuji with the Capture One and you plug it in, your name structure is identical with what's on the card.
Yeah.
So that's not a problem.
Yeah, it's just the wireless transfer
of the Fuji to an iPad or whatever.
Correct. But I'm currently using a wireless router that the Fuji camera X-T3 will see. And then you can connect to that, and then the iPad connects to the same router, and they talk to each other.
He's making his own network.
Right, and so I shoot that way, and it goes to the iPad. But the renaming is the only issue. Otherwise, I'd be doing all Fuji headshots.
Well, here's my question.
Yes.
The switching to the Fuji. Do you feel like you really got the advantage that you were hoping for? Is it that much lighter?
Oh my God, yes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
hands down.
I use a dual spider holster and have both of my cameras on there. I have a wide and a long, right? And my gosh, it's night and day. Because
I shot with an X-T3, mm-hmm. and I didn't feel like there was that. I didn't feel like it was that perceptible of a weight difference. I mean, the camera itself is smaller. But the lens is not. I mean, the lens is a little smaller too. But I just felt like it wasn't like, whoo, this is game changing. I didn't. And the other problem I have with the X-T3, and I have a video on my channel all about this.
Sure.
As much as I love that camera, the grip, I can't hang on to it.
Right.
It's just there's no big. I need that big handle that you get on the side of a Nikon or a Canon.
Well, as soon as you get,
even if you put the battery grip.
Uh-huh.
Even if you put that on there. The trigger is still way back on the top of the camera. The trigger isn't forward on the grip mm-hmm. the way it is on Nikons and Canons.
Right.
And I just find that to be awkward, the way you have to twist your hand to get back to the trigger and the way you have to hold the camera. I guess I'd get used to it, mm-hmm. but it was one of the big things that kept me from switching full-time to Fuji. I always said, I'm waiting for the X-H2 because it's got a bigger grip. But at this point, I don't know why they'd ever come out with an X-H2.
Well, from the way you've been talking on your podcast, it sounds like you're gonna stick around with Canon because of the mirrorless.
Gotta wait for the i5, the R5, and the R6 to see what's gonna happen. The new R6 specs just dropped, and they look incredible. The R6 specs look great for $1,500 less. If that camera comes in at $2,500, wow, 8K video if you want it, you know, and the same EVF. That you get on the R5, because usually that's one of the places that they're going to scrimp you.
Right.
And they're trying to, you know, have a cut. The EVF. No, it's the same EVF. And it's used to two cards, and it does, you know, and everything is full frame. But man, if the rumor is true, a 20 megabyte sensor? Mm. What is this, 2005?
Yeah.
A 20 Why would you put a 20 megabyte sensor in a full frame camera? At that level.
Well, I know.
Well, hang on. Do I need to answer this?
Go ahead.
Let's answer this.
Okay, go ahead.
Because it does better at high ISO. And you're going to go.
That's true. The more pixels you have, the smaller the pixels are. And the smaller the pixels are, the less dynamic range you have.
That's correct.
And that's true.
And then you're in a mirrorless system.
But
where
if
your
that's
sensor...
true, if that's the reason, why wouldn't you do that on the R5, which is going to be the flagship of the high ISO cameras that they have at that level?
Because they're having to rev up the processor, but don't forget, now we're going back to a mirrorless system where your mirror, where you have no mirror, so your sensor is live all the time.
Right.
So basically, we're shooting video stills.
Right.
So having those bigger pixel is going to, the bigger pixel sight is going to give you a better dynamic range. The first ones they came out with, you know how this is, it's a whole shell game with the manufacturers. You know, what does one camera make better than the next? The very first thing that most photographers look at is megapixels.
You think so? I don't think they do anymore.
Oh, God, they do. Come on. Are you kidding me?
I don't think so anymore because we've reached that point now to where everything's got 24 or more, and that's plenty. I think it used to be that way.
It is plenty.
In the ramp up. But I think now everything, that's what's so shocking to me about it, is this is the first time in a long time that I've even asked what the megapixels were. I can't tell you what the megapixels are on a Fuji. I don't know. So I know it's over, that's north of 20, and that's all I need to know. So that's why I concentrate on the other, on all the other stuff. But that's why I'm so shocked to find out that it was going to be 20.
Yeah, that is an odd number. But, odd that,
but
they went,
you
backwards.
Are a seasoned photographer that knows what he's doing. You're going to buy a camera, and you're going to hang on to that camera until the wheels fall off of it.
Yes.
The new photographers, the manufacturers, don't make money on you as a consumer of their products. They make money on the soccer moms and the new people coming up. And if they have the Mark II and the Mark III comes out with 10% more megapixels, they're jumping. Not because
of any
other reason.
So you're saying that the 40 megapixels or whatever they're going to put on the R5 is just a marketing ploy to get the new photographers to buy the R5 and not the R6?
Absolutely.
And so the R6 is then for the veteran photographers who know they don't necessarily need more than 20?
Correct. Let's go to Nikon. Nikon just released the D6, their flagship. And I believe it's $6,000. And it's a 24 megapixel sensor. And everybody in the Nikon community is going nuts saying, what is this? It's $6,000. Why can't we get a 50 or 48 megapixel sensor like Canon?
I don't want that much.
You don't need a 40 megapixel. You really don't need a 50 megapixel sensor.
I don't think so. But then again, medium format, 100 megapixel sensor, I would love to shoot.
Yeah. I don't need anything more than 20 for...
For the majority of the
work,
things that we do, right.
But unfortunately with weddings, especially the reception... There's a lot of cropping away. There's a lot of shooting wide at the reception on the dance floor. And then you get back home and you go, oh, this half of the picture has got Aunt Margaret making a funny face. That's the one I want to give to the client. So I'm just going to crop this sucker. It was horizontal. And now it's becoming 50% of this image and it's becoming vertical and it's all about her. And bam, there it is. So now you're talking about, you know, a 10 megapixel file. And, okay. You know, because you're cropping the 20 in half.
Okay. So think about this though. Think about where we're at today and where were we at, you know, 5 or 10 years ago where we had less megapixels. We were doing the same thing and it was fine. I don't think you had anybody complaining, right?
No, you didn't have anybody complaining. But if I had to deliver files to my clients that looked like the files on the Canon 40D that I started with, they wouldn't be complaining, but it would be evident. I mean, there was a lot of,
today.
I used to have to run Noise Ninja on my files,
right?
You know, because there was so much noise in those
files. True, yeah. Well, plus,
but you've given me a lot to think about because I hadn't really thought about. You're right. More megapixels means usually less dynamic range and less performance. So it's going to be really interesting to see when the reviews come out. If the reviews come out, then they go, the D6 actually has better ISO performance than the R5. Then that's a slam dunk. I'm getting the R6.
Right now, have you ever checked the DxO? Ratings for the cameras?
No.
Okay. I would definitely go look at that because that is analytical, you know, scientist guys just tearing this stuff apart, and some of the results will absolutely shock you. So for example, in the Nikon lineup, the Nikon 610 has the sharpest sensor when paired with like a 24 millimeter 2.8 lens. It actually slightly outperforms the D5. And it's kind of crazy to see some of those things. They tell you, like, this lens works best on this camera. And they do all this. It's really right. Crazy stats.
Well, I don't you think, though, sometimes you just get too deep. And then you're just like, oh, I don't, you
know.
You
do get too deep.
You can't buy a bad camera.
No, you cannot. Camera you buy
can't
now.
Buy a bad camera.
I'm a firm believer that if you have the skill set, the camera becomes an enabler. It makes things easier for you. But any one of us could go out right now with a Rebel 2000 and go shoot a wedding.
Sure.
And we can make it work and we can make a business with it.
Yep.
And I find that a lot of photographers
I would say, though, with a Rebel 2000 on my image, I would see the difference in my images.
You would
because
see
that was
it.
One of the things with the Canon 5D Mark III. It was at the point where because I had other photographers who worked for me, and they would shoot with other Canon bodies or Nikon bodies, mm-hmm. and there was no doubt if I put their pictures in the same folder with my pictures, I could absolutely pull my pictures out. I could absolutely say the quality of the image itself just had a better quality coming from the 5D Mark III.
So, but what was it? Was it the combination of the processor and the sensor and the shooting? Or was it you shooting?
No. I'm talking about the quality of the image. I'm talking about the color. I'm talking about the dynamic range. All the other technical terms I can't think of off the top of my mind that you notice, the moir.
Right. Oh, no. I love that.
But also a lot of times it's the lens. You know, like they always say, invest in the glass.
Yes.
More than you do the body. I've got my glasses, 10 years old, and I'm going to drive that truck till the wheels fall off.
See?
The very best glass Canon makes, and I'll keep on using it until I have to replace it, and because replacing it will cost me a fortune.
Yeah, and going back to my Nikons, I mean, another reason why I still have them is because I absolutely love them. So, I don't like getting rid of stuff, you know. But I do love the Fujis. I love because they're just smaller and they're easy to shoot. God, the mirrorless, you know, the full frame focusing area and.
So one of the things that drove me to Fuji, and even though we're off topic, I don't care. Do
I
you
know.
Care?
I don't care.
We're talking about photography.
We're talking about photography. That's all I care about. So,
although you started to ask me a question, we can circle back. You started to ask me a question about bar mitzvahs.
Well, we did. And I have that on my notes right here in front of me.
You have notes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what's that like?
It's sexy.
Yeah,
it's very sexy.
It's on his iPad.
I never have notes. I mean, I have the only notes I have are just little, like if I want to talk about something funny happens to me in the week and I want to mention it, mm-hmm. I'll have a little note to mention it, but I never have any like show, like, no. I mean, you know, and I have, and then right before the show, I'll look up photography news that I want to talk about.
Well, Robert writes the show notes.
That's the problem with having interviews is that now you have to come up with questions.
Oh no! The questions we just pull off our ass.
Yeah,
but I write notes of things that I might want to talk about, or I need to pull a title out. I need to get my clickbait.
And mainly, he's writing notes as we're speaking so that he can put it in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So on my switch to Fuji, this is what I found out. So I've had an X100, and I had the very first one.
Right.
So I've had it for a while. A friend of mine, Leah Smethers, we have coffee on a regular basis, and we just chit-chat about photography, and she pulled that baby out, set it on the coffee table, and I thought, oh my God, that is so sexy. And yeah. I played around with it, and then I made a comment to Terry, and Terry actually bought me Leah's used camera when she upgraded to the S.
Terry is Robert's wife, and she wanted to say hello.
Oh, yeah, she wanted to say hello.
She's saying hello to you.
She's
hello,
actually Terry. Editing a wedding.
Have
right
I
now.
Met Terry? I haven't met Terry, have I?
Yeah, you met Terry.
She was at the imaging when we did your podcast.
Yeah, she was being really quiet.
Oh, it's possible I was drunk.
It's okay. Yeah. I was drunk, too, when we got married. Oh, no, I wasn't. No, I wasn't. I was sober for this one. So, anyway, what happened was I had the camera, and I wanted a nice camera to take with me on motorcycle rides. Better than a phone, but not having to drag all my Nikons out. And then I started using that camera just in black and white for personal projects for myself at weddings. And during the reception, I would take all my Nikon gear off, and I just run around my X100, and I just take black and white candids. And I noticed that the people were not preparing themselves for a photo as I walked through the banquet area. Like, they were just like, oh, it's just a guy with a little old retro camera.
Mm-hmm. I do the same thing with my F now.
It's amazing. And I just thought, okay, so it was just a personal project, and I had, and this, you know, the original was 16 megapixels. It was the first X-Trans sensor. It's a 10-year-old camera. And 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I had a bride like, oh my God, can I see that photo? Oh, that looks so amazing. I want to make sure that's in my wedding album. And I thought, ooh, God, point and shoot 16 megapixel. This is going to be tough. And I made a beautiful black and white of it. She loved it. And I kind of started thinking about the viability of this small camera for candids. So then I got the X Pro 2 so I could change the lenses on it.
Mm.
And I I really like that retro rangefinder. And when I shoot, I like the rangefinder where I look at the viewfinder. I actually shoot with both eyes open. So right. I can see what's around me as I'm shooting with my right eye. It doesn't obstruct your view at all. Right. And then I started finding that the quality of those images worked well. Even though it's a crop sensor, it worked fantastic for weddings. It worked great for events. It was lighter and the equipment was less expensive. And oh, we yeah. recently...
It's much less expensive.
Yes. Oh, a lot less expensive. And
yeah.
In 2 weekend period, Terry and I both dropped and broke our 24-72.8s. So we're looking now at a, you know, $4,000 lens purchase for two lenses. And I thought, this might be a good time to pick up another Fuji. So I picked up the X-Pro 2, the X-T2, and then shot the X-Pro 2 and the X-T2. Terry was still shooting with Nikon, and we would put our images up side by side, and it was fine. It was perfect. No one knows different. Not a single client made any comment whatsoever about the quality, the captures, nothing.
They wouldn't.
Okay, quick question. When you walk around shooting the reception pictures, are you mounting a flash? Are you using a remote-triggered off-camera light or on-camera flash? What are you doing?
A lot of the ones where I was walking around, it was no flash, available light only in black and white.
Okay.
But
That's
now,
great. A great look. And, you know, I've said this publicly. When I decide I don't want to shoot weddings anymore, what I'm going to do is I'm going to still shoot weddings, but only if you'll let me shoot the whole wedding in black and white.
Absolutely.
Because that's what I would really love to do, is shoot black and white. Yeah. But, because that's another problem I have with Fuji, is that I bounce flash like crazy. I really like to control the direction of light. I really like to work on that. And when you put that big flash on top of that small X-T3 body, now you really got an unbalanced rig, especially since there's no big grip on it.
And if you added a modifier on top of it.
It's even worse.
You get used to it.
Yeah. I mean, I use a flash for most of the wedding photography, and I use a Godox 860 V2, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Sure.
And with the grip and the XT3 and the 16-55 2.8, to me, it's pretty balanced. But I think that your hands are a lot larger than mine.
Yeah, I have big hands. I mean, well, I made a whole... like a long video.
Yeah, I watched it.
We watched
where
it.
All I did was talk about I can't get a grip on this camera.
And
if you put the big grip and everything on it with the extra batteries, now you're negating the whole weight advantage.
How are you negating it? Have you put the battery grip on your Canon?
No, I don't. I don't need it.
Oh.
Yeah, because
then you're not seeing a weight advantage.
I used to do a whole wedding with a Canon and never swap my battery out. You're not going to do that with a Fuji.
No.
Okay. What do I mean? Well, I mean, with the battery grip, I can shoot a whole wedding with three batteries in the camera.
Right. But you've also now made the camera more of a square brick. And correct. you still don't get the real... It's not like the Canon or the Nikon. When you pick them up, that's an axe handle in your hand. You know, I mean, you got it.
Oh,
absolutely. I'm a guy. I'm swinging that camera over my head. I'm holding that camera one-handed all the time. And I like to just know I've got a good grip on it.
Well, and it's not just about the weight. It's about the mirrorless system. I mean,
I really thought the mirrorless system was a hoax, because if you don't have a mirror in your camera, everything's a mirrorless camera. Your phone's a mirrorless camera.
Right.
I have never shot so much available light photography in my entire life since shooting.
Well, you know why? You're using an EVF, so you can see it
before
you shoot it.
I feel like I'm cheating.
Yeah, so you can see it. You can be like, oh, let me just pump this up a stop or two and pull in some more light because it's a little too dark. And that's why I love the Fuji X100F and soon to be V. It's for the same reason. Is it you can compose that seam and right there in the camera just go, oh, you know what? I want to make this a little more dark and moody.
And
I
love
adjustment there and pop it off. Whereas if you're doing it with a mirrored system, you just got to shoot it and fix it in Lightroom.
Yeah, fix it in post.
And when you're shooting an event, I like to be discreet. And so if I'm not using a flash, I'm using the 70-200 equivalent, and I've got it down at my waist, and I've got the screen flipped out, and I'm looking down at it, and I'm firing off these candid photos where they're not making these crazy faces because they see a camera. You know, I'm not raising it up to my face.
And the EVF for me gives me better flash control.
Because you can see your ambient light
setting. Because I use my flash control not as a main, but as a fill. So I'm using contrast control of my flash.
Okay.
So if I use TTL at -2, my flash is never going to overpower the scene. So I set my ambient and then let the flash fill in the shadow. So even when I'm doing weddings, you know, the flash on there, it's just acting as a fill for my contrast.
Mm-hmm. Are you shooting the world's brightest receptions? Because I shoot so many receptions where...
I
shot at the River House the other day. I shot a bar mitzvah at the River House right before COVID hit. And it's wood beam ceilings and glass all the way around, and it's at night. Yes. I mean, that room is just a cave.
That is exactly...
You cannot shoot natural light. Not to mention the fact, thank you, DJ, with all the colored lights that you're putting on the dance floor.
Yes.
Why you got to shoot black and white if you're going to shoot available.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little different, I think, in that aspect. And I actually talk to my clients about that. And I tell them, I said, I like the scene to look, I guess, true to nature.
So yeah, you want to look the way it looked to you on your wedding day.
Exactly. So if it's going to be dark, then your photos are going to look dark. You know, the 15 candles that you have at the front of the sanctuary is not going to light up the whole church. So that's what you're going to
see. You're exactly the opposite from me. I approach it from the perspective of it's my job to show this so you can see it and overcome whatever limitations you put in front of me. But that's not to say that my way is the right way. And this goes back to what I said at the very, when you asked me what equipment do you need, it depends on what kind of photographer you want to be. I secretly admire, and not so secret, I'm saying it right now, I admire the people who say, you know what, I'm not going to overpower this room with flash so that you have a clean, crisp image. I'm going to work with what you give me, and you're going to get mood, and you're going to get, you know, I admire that because many times I like those images. So I try to do a little bit of both. You know, I'm going to shut down the flashes and get some of the other stuff too. But I've been doing it that way for so long where I make sure I can light that room that it's really hard for me to go hard in the other direction, especially since if you came to me after seeing my work, that's not what you expect. Were you always that way, Robert?
Yes. I think a lot of it has to do with my training was in the Air Force as a photojournalist.
Right.
So it was not to change the story. When you go
I love it. And like, if I could, I'd shoot all natural light and black and white. I would love to do it. I really would.
Well, I bet you.
Like I said, like you said, when you bought your camera, with my family pictures and stuff like that, a lot of times I'm like, no, I'm just going to go black and white. We're going to an event. We're going to Disney World. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to shoot Disney World in black and white the whole day.
Absolutely. Like? It's beautiful.
Well, what's cool too is on the Fuji, you can set it to black and white, but your RAW is still going to be in color.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? But I tend to shoot JPEGs on the Fuji.
True.
Because I want access to all of the different film simulations.
Right.
Classic Chrome being my favorite. And the other reason is I don't want to have to do post-processing.
Yeah.
You know, can you all hear my dog?
Yes.
Absolutely. It's okay. You're good.
Yeah, can you hear my dog barking? Because I don't want to do post-processing, because the more post-processing I have to do, the less I'm going to shoot. So, yeah, I shoot JPEGs on the Fuji almost all the time. Because I don't want to have to, and because you can see it in the EVF before you shoot it.
Yeah,
there's, you know, your exposure is almost always going to be dead on.
So I shoot. So, you know, we're talking about backups earlier. I shoot RAW plus JPEG, which, in my mind, I find is a good backup system for me. And I have other photographers that shoot a RAW plus RAW, because technically a JPEG isn't a backup of your RAW capture.
Correct.
No, it isn't. And I shoot RAW. And a JPEG backup, and the JPEG is a backup to my RAW capture, and it's there, and it stays on a separate card for a couple of months usually, and that's just, it's just a backup. And I've only had to do it once, just one time. I somehow mistakenly formatted my RAW card, and the panic!
Yeah,
the panic when I realized I had just done that, and then oh, thank God the JPEGs are here.
So let me tell you one thing that I have discovered recently: shooting Fuji, I have found out that Lightroom doesn't handle the Fuji files as well as Capture One.
Because there's
You're not new. Everyone knows that, I think, at this point. Don't you think?
I read that numerous
places that said the Capture One absolutely does a better job with Fuji.
Right.
So, but the one thing I love about Capture One, it's simple things that stun me. It does not reset your RAW settings when you import the file. So if you shoot in RAW and you have your camera set to black and white, to Acros Red, which is my favorite, and I do a +2 on the contrast, so it's really dark and moody. When I bring it into Capture One, it looks exactly the way I shot it in the camera.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Now, I can go back and I can go to the Fuji profile and select another profile if I need to, but when it comes in, it stays black and white.
Does Capture One have the simulations like?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. But it actually brings in the simulation because your RAW file, when it's saved, it actually has a JPEG header, has a preview in it. Mm-hmm. And that preview is based on how the JPEG settings of the camera was set when you captured the RAW file.
And Lightroom ignores that.
And Lightroom ignores that and just resets all of your settings to zero, where Capture One will keep everything the way it was. So you could shoot RAW, bring them into Capture One. Obviously, it's another step than just taking the JPEG out. And then just go ahead and select all your images and hit export, and it would be like a JPEG, but you still have your RAW.
I messed around with Capture One, and I thought, wow, this is a great program, but trying to learn a whole new program.
Dude, it's a pain in the ass. I forced
myself.
Please
don't make me learn a whole new program.
Yeah. I forced it, and Capture One is lacking in one area for wedding photographers. One area that I use all the time, and that is the edit capture time. It does not have that feature.
Yeah, for syncing cameras.
And you know about editing capture time. I mean, I know you shoot a lot of weddings by yourself.
Yes.
But if you have other photographers, and I routinely have a team.
Right.
Then if you take an iPhone, because you have an iPhone, right? Or you Android.
Sure. No, okay. I have a cell phone.
Okay, but all the iPhones are synced to Cupertino. So you can pick up any iPhone, and they're down to the second synchronized. So if you bring up an app that has the second showing, any time during the night, my photographer just needs to take a shot of the iPhone with the hour, the minutes, and the seconds. And then I can go into Lightroom, find that image, select that, select all the other ones with the option A, and do edit capture time and type in the time that was on the first image when he captured the cell phone photo. Mm-hmm. And it'll shift all the images to correctly. And I do that for every single camera.
That's great. That's great. But if they go and take a picture of their phone, why can't they just sync with your camera right there? I mean, that would be just as much effort.
Because sometimes I'll have photographers come just for the reception, or I'll have photographers just come for the getting ready. I'll just have, I just need you to come out to get, you know, especially if it's going to be a different location where, you know, they're getting ready at a hotel and they're going to move to whatever, you know, like, so I'll be doing the getting ready shots, but I want them to go shoot the sanctuary that's empty before I get there, because when I get there, the whole crew's coming with me. I have the whole bridal party. And then during the church ceremony, if they're going to a venue later for the reception, I need to send somebody there while I'm shooting the ceremony to get all my food shots and my setup shots. Because once the people get there, that shit's destroyed. So a lot of times I'll stage my people.
It's funny to me that you are, with your images, you're like, listen, if it's dark, it's dark. If you've got a moody place, it's going to be moody. You know, I'm going for this real, et cetera. And then on the very opposite side of the coin, you're like, I'm going to have a team of 16 because I've got to get all of these other shots absolutely before the people arrive. And and I'm exactly the opposite.
Yes.
I'm like, I'm setting lights up around the room. I'm doing all this stuff because my pictures have got to look this way. And then I'm like, but listen, if you don't give me time to get in there and shoot the food, then I'm not shooting the food.
So isn't it kind of interesting how we flip
I really have a, yeah. I've always been this way. I don't care about stuff as much as I'm supposed to as a wedding photographer. I know it's really important, but I can only be so creative with it.
But
I'm creative enough. I'm going to get the decorations. I'm going to get the tables, etc. But I'm not going to usually shoot the stuff at your wedding at the level that the people are shooting stuff who want their picture featured in a bridal magazine.
Ah. Yes.
You know, because that's the thing you see in the bridal magazines too, as pictures, a bridal magazine, most of the pictures are pictures of the stuff, because people reading bridal magazines, they're not interested in the photographer. They're interested in the stuff. They're trying to figure out what color scheme do I want, and what favors do I want, and what flowers do I want. So the photographers take these beautiful images of all this stuff and the hopes that they'll get published in a magazine. And I'm like, that's great if that's what you're shooting for, but I'd rather spend that time taking pictures of you.
Yeah.
And I don't bring a team like you do. If I did bring a team, or the times I have brought a team, yeah, that's what I do. I'm like, go shoot the room. So well, you know, what's funny about that, though, is, and you can back me up on this, I'm sure, is that shooting this stuff can be one of the hardest things to do.
Yes.
It can. I think to be really creative with it, I think it can be really hard sometimes. Like if you bring in a second shooter just to back you up on some things, sometimes it's like, go shoot the room. And then when you look at the pictures later, you're like, oh, I should have shot the room.
Oh, no. Yeah, that happens a lot to me.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. My team listens to the podcast. I shouldn't say that.
Bure, do you do, you offer albums, right?
Oh, absolutely. If you don't do albums as a wedding photographer, you're leaving so much money on the
right.
table.
So my question was, I was just thinking about, you know, if you don't have the stuff, you know, they don't have pictures of the cake and the food and stuff, that's not going to be part of their wedding album.
Oh, no, I get the pictures. Oh, don't get me wrong. I just don't go nuts with the, it's, I, you know, I don't have to get into the room and spend 20 minutes shooting the room before you get in there.
Oh, I see.
I can literally do the room in 3 minutes. I go in and it's like, okay, I got to have a wide shot. I got to have the flowers. I got to have the thing. I got to, I shoot the rings during the reception. I can shoot the cake during the reception if it, you know, before the cake cutting. So I just, you know, I'm that way. I don't spend a ton of time on the stuff. I get it. You know, I get it throughout the day too, if I can. And I tell the clients, you know, what I want to do is after we finish the formals and the groups, I want to work with the two of you. And then if I have enough time, I want to try and get into the reception room 10 minutes before you open the door so I can shoot the room as well. But if we get backed up, if there's a problem, if things go off the rails and I don't get you but for 20 minutes, then I'm not going to go shoot the room.
I think like, this discussion is great because it just proves the point that there is not a right way. There isn't a single way to do your job as a photographer. And that's one of the things that I find very creative about photography is there's a book that can help guide you in what you could do or should do or maybe some bare minimums. But Bure is a very experienced, very highly successful photographer, and he has a different way of doing it my way. It's not a, sure. It's just different.
Mm-hmm. No. It's about, you've got to figure out what you're going to do. You got to do it your way. And then you have to find your client.
That's the hardest part. Okay. We're talking about client. We would like to know the difference between a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah.
Bar mitzvahs are boys and bat mitzvahs are girls.
Right. I told you that, Robert.
Right. But, well, we talk about that, but do you ever shoot a bat mitzvah? Because I never hear you mention that on the show.
Oh, well, I say bar mitzvah just as a catch-all.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
I do bat mitzvahs all the time. If you do, and if you do a family, you're going to do every kid in the family. This is, by the way, is what makes bar mitzvahs the greatest event photography in the world. So much better than weddings. If I could do nothing but bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs, that's all I would do.
Really? Oh, I want you to share this. Yes.
Yeah, share it.
Yeah. There's so many great reasons. First of all, how many times do you have your wedding client come in to pick up their album? And then when they're picking up their album, they say, oh, by the way, I'm getting married again next year on January 14th. So go ahead and put me down for that.
Well, if you're one of my cousins, that could happen quite a bit.
This happens to me all the time. If a family comes to me and they're like, oh, we want you to shoot our son's bar mitzvah. And I'm like, great, this is Jacob. And they go, yeah. And I'm like, do you have any brothers and sisters? And he's like, yeah, I have two sisters and a brother. I'm like, score?
Yeah.
That's four bar mitzvahs. I'm going to get right there. And every one of them is going to pay me more money than a wedding.
So it's basically
because
just an event.
They want the photo guest book and they want the session that goes with the photo guest book. They want the album. They might want an album for the grandparents as well because the grandparents are getting up there and they've got the money because you're not dealing with the 26-year-olds who are getting married and trying to save money for their house. You're dealing with the mom and the dad who are in their 40s and are business professionals and have the money. And they've known this party was coming for 13 years. And now they're going to bring in all their friends, all their relatives, and most of their business associates. So it has to be a good one. And okay. They're prepared to spend the money. The most expensive events I've ever worked are by far bar mitzvahs more than weddings.
I think we need to market that.
And they value professionalism. So you don't have to connect with them. You don't have to, on that level, you don't have to worry that you're getting, you know, I'm getting older. And I worry that the 26-year-olds come in and they're like, I don't want grandpa shooting my wedding. No, no, no. That's not a problem with bar mitzvahs, because you're the same age or a little bit older than mom and dad. And they value your age. They value your professionalism. They want somebody who can just take care of this for them. They want to know they're in good hands and they don't have to micromanage you. I mean, there are some, of course, but they just, they're like, great, you've got this. And all my friends recommended you, and great, we're off to the races. I can't tell you how many bar mitzvahs I get where I don't even meet the clients. They just contact me and say, I had three different people recommend you. Just send me a contract.
Wow.
So yeah. Who do I contact? How do I get started?
Well, that's the tricky part. I got my first one by accident. A woman came to me for a bar mitzvah. And when I was finished pitching, I said, I have to tell you, honestly, I have never shot a bar mitzvah before. And she said, that's all right. I've seen your wedding stuff and it's good. And you've got 8 months to prepare.
Wow.
And I said, okay. And that was my first one. And I've never advertised. And from there, it's all been word of mouth. The last three bar mitzvahs I shot where the person did not come to me directly, you know, from, such and such sent me to you. I asked them, I said, how did you find out about me? And they said, there's a Facebook group called Jewish Moms of Tampa Bay, and you are the most recommended photographer in the group.
Hmm. Oh my God. Look that up. See if there's a Jewish, because I have to say, I don't think that in my friends and associations, I know any Jewish people.
Well, you know, like I said, that's the beauty of being in that community, is it's not like a wedding. If you're getting married, you don't necessarily want the same photographer that your friend had, because you want your own photographer.
Yes.
You know, and you want it to be all about you. I get that. You're 26. But if you're a doctor and you're doing a bar mitzvah, you just go to your friend whose bar mitzvah you went to last year that was great, and you go, who are your vendors? And he goes, this was my DJ, and this was my photographer, and this was my planner, and this was my person who did all the decorations. And then you take those cards home and you call those four people and you say, I need to meet with you guys. You know, I would say 70% of the bar mitzvahs that I work, that's the same DJ. And the other 30% are DJ number two.
Wow.
There's like two DJs that are known in town as being the best bar mitzvah DJs. And I'm known as one of the best bar mitzvah photographers. And so I show up to an event and it's like, hey, John, how you doing? Hey, I know the video guy. I know that. And you know, as a wedding photographer, that's wonderful. So when I'm shooting an event with like John, who's become a friend of mine now and who I recommend, and he recommends me, I'm shooting an event. John knows exactly what I need. They put that kid up in the chair for the hora.
Right.
And if they don't turn that kid around to face the stage where I'm standing, John will tell him to. He's on the mic. They're out there, Hava Nagila, da 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 da. And John will be like, turn him. You know, because he knows I need a shot of the kid's face. I need him facing my camera. And I'm standing on the stage or the riser to get height. Right? So it's beautiful. Or setups. I'll go to John and go, I need a group shot. John will go, okay. He'll call the whole room together, get them all in the middle of the floor, get them where I need them so I can light them and get the shot. It's wonderful.
Oh my God.
And it's great for the clients too, because when they come to me and I go, this is the DJ you want, and this is the video guy you want. And I'll tell them, this is the dream team. If you put all of us in a room together, your event is completely taken care of, because we've done this together so many times that there just won't be any problems for your event. And that's what they want.
So it's very much like a wedding. It has certain events that happen during the bar mitzvah.
And, oh my God, yes. More. I would say possibly more than a wedding. So here's how it's going to go. If you want to hear this?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So, you're going to have to shoot the temple pictures. That's going to be that morning or earlier in the week, depending on the temple, because every temple is different. You got your Reformed temples and your Orthodox temples. So some temples are Orthodox, which means nothing can be done on Saturday, no work on Saturday. So you have to come in on like Thursday and shoot the pictures. And then you have like the Reformed temples where you can actually come in like the morning of and shoot the temple pictures. So they all have different ways of doing that. So you're going to have to do that. And then you're going to have the party. You're going to have... The first hour is going to be usually cocktails, where the kids are going to be in the main room playing games. The DJ is going to be doing these games, and the adults are going to be out on the back patio having drinks and food. And they're going to have these same games they play all the time. Like one's called Coke Pepsi, where they run around. So they're going to play these games, and you shoot that. And then they're going to have the entrances where they're going to bring the family in. Everyone's in the room. The family comes in. Everybody dances and screams, and that's a big deal. Then there's going to be the candle lighting. And that's where the kids come up and they read this poem for 12 candles or 13 candles. And they have people come up and light the candles. And this was kind of parodied on Saturday Night Live with the girl who would play the Jewish boy at the bar mitzvah.
Yes, I've seen that one.
You know, I love you so much. You taught me to fly. Here, please come up, Aunt Vi. You know, she comes up and lights a candle. You take a picture of her, the job with Aunt Vi, and they go away. So there's that. Then there's going to be the horror where everyone in the family gets put up in a chair and held over everybody's head and dancing. There's going to be the blessing of the bread. I forget what it's called, the motzi, where usually the grandfather will come up and say this blessing over the unleavened bread and when Molotov, and he cuts the bread and takes a bite. That's like a little prayer that they do. And then I think that's about, and then there's going to be a slideshow. There'll be a slideshow which could run as long as 20 minutes, which basically shows every picture of this kid ever. And I don't do the slideshows. I've been asked to do them, and I'm just like, oh, I don't want the work because I wouldn't be able to charge that much for it. So I usually give that off to somebody else. But there's photographers who do. And then you get, mom and dad who give you 400 pictures, and you've got to go through and put them to music and do all that kind of stuff. And the other thing that's great about them is it's just really a wonderful event. They've got their whole family there, and their friends are there, and the kid is 13, and there's just like a wedding. There's a lot of love. All the family came in from out of town, and there's my uncle. It's really a lot of fun. It really is. It's laid back and relaxed, and everybody from 60 to 12 is in that room.
Well, every time I hear you talk about them, I want to reach out and start doing this.
I want to know.
Fantastic.
Are you going to teach this at Imaging?
Do what?
Are you going to teach this topic at Imaging?
No, I don't know what I'm going to teach at Imaging this year. I don't know if I'm going to be at Imaging because I wasn't picked by the speaker selection team at Imaging to speak this year. But I have talked to Millers, and Millers is like, oh, we'll put you up to speak in our spot. The way it works, doubling back to that, the way it works at conventions and how they decide who's going to speak is that they have usually like a committee. In the case of the PPA, it's a committee. In the case of WPPI, it's just one person who's in charge, and they just decide who's going to speak. So, like last year, I just got I got called to speak at WPPI. The committee then gets together, with a big board like the one that they would show for setting the lineup for a television station, and they decide who's going to be the speakers. And, oh, you know what? We need somebody talking about weddings here. We need somebody talking about this here. And so then they go through and they pick who's going to speak, and anyone can submit. And usually I get picked most years, and this year I didn't. But to be fair, I've spoken a lot. And then the other way that you can speak is if you have a sponsor who is a big sponsor. So if you speak for Miller's or you speak for White House Custom Color, these are probably the two biggest sponsors of the PPA. And with that sponsorship, they actually get spots in the lineup. So like Miller's has like two spots where they get to pick who speaks. And that person is sponsored by them and paid by them. So PPA has approval. They have to say to PPA, we want to put this person up. And then PPA says, okay, we're fine with that person. And the first time I ever spoke was that way. PPA didn't know me from Adam. They'd never heard of me. But Millers knew who I was. And when they went to Millers and said, do you have anybody in mind for your spots? Millers said, yeah, we want this guy, Bure Perry. And so then I spoke, because of that. And the next year, Imaging USA asked me to speak. And the next year, and Imaging USA asked me to speak. So then this year, if I go up, it'll be because Millers puts me up.
Well, I hope you come because it's in our backyard. It's in Dallas, Texas.
There's nothing.
Yeah. I lived in Dallas for 10 years.
Yes. Yes.
There's nothing wrong with being an attendee, Bure, at Imaging. Come and have fun.
Oh, no. We're going to do something. We're going to shoot something.
Well, here's the thing. You asked if I was going to teach this at Imaging, and I very much would like to.
Right.
But I know that I won't draw a big crowd with it. And I did that last year. I did pre-con, and then the year before that, I taught to a room where I got maybe 150 people in the room because I was teaching a class. It was very technical, and the idea behind the class was I wanted to teach people a lot of the technical concepts of photography that people don't understand, and they don't tell people they don't understand them because they're embarrassed.
Oh, please! You'd
be surprised how many photographers really don't know what dynamic range is.
Mm.
So it was called Flashes, Files, and Fast Glass. And all I did was talk about, these are the things that I didn't understand when I first started as a photographer. And I bet you don't, I bet some of the people in this room don't understand it either. So let me explain to you what dynamic range is and how it works. Let me explain to you what the inverse square law is. Let me explain to you, you know, what high-speed sync really is and how it works and how it may not be doing what you think it, what you want it to do. So that is, and that was a very satisfying class because the people who came up to me would say, wow, you know, I really didn't understand this and now I do. Thank you. But it was like 150 people and I really like to speak in the room where it's like 500. I like to have a big audience.
I have a really big audience. I think that you could really draw
that. And if you want that audience, you got to just talk about weddings.
No. I think you can pull it off. Challenge you to do it.
It's not a question of pulling it off. It doesn't matter if you're the best speaker in the world or anything else. There just aren't that many people shooting bar mitzvahs or trying to shoot bar mitzvahs.
Because we don't know that that's a good moneymaker. It's a viable
but it's not
business.
It's not a good moneymaker because there isn't a strong Jewish population in every town in America, but every town in America has got weddings.
Yeah, I can see
that's
that.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've got five synagogues within 20, 30 miles of my house. So I've got the population here for bar mitzvahs. But if you live in, you know, Oklahoma, I don't know what Oklahoma's like, but you may not have a big Jewish community there. If you live in Miami, you're going to be shooting $1 million bar mitzvahs. I mean, the bar mitzvahs in Miami are crazy.
Oh, we're going to move. We're moving.
No.
We're
and
moving
it's just
to
great.
Israel.
You know, you get to know these families and you shoot one child and then a year later, 2 years later, you shoot the other child. And then a couple years later, the first child needs her senior photos. And so
yeah,
you
because
get the
you're
senior
already
photos.
In.
Yeah. And then the family needs a group picture, a family portrait. And then you become the photographer for this family. And that a relationship. I just did an album. I did three albums and wall art from a bar mitzvah for a family who I also did their son 2 years ago. And I did all the headshots for their law office.
That's nice.
Wow.
That's off one client.
Wow.
I like that
scenario.
I like that scenario.
Yeah.
Well, hey, listen, it's we're hour 20. So
that doesn't surprise me a bit.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
I hate to cut this off, but
he wants to because spaghetti.
Mama's cooking spaghetti in there.
Cut it in half and make it two episodes so that people, because no one's listening for an hour 20.
Oh yeah, they are.
Okay.
Oh, they absolutely listen to our long episodes. They enjoy
our episodes usually go an hour, and if it was up to me, they'd go 45.
We try 45. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, I'm actually a firm believer. I think that there's something to be said for having a podcast that's only 20 minutes long because that's the average length that a person is in their car.
You don't drive far, do you? You don't live in Oklahoma, do you?
Well, I did. When I was going to the beach all the time to shoot weddings on the beach, I was. It was an hour drive there. That's why I listened to so many podcasts, because it was an hour there, an hour back. And I didn't mind the drive because of the podcasts.
And that's why I don't listen to very many anymore, because I used to work in an office for 30 years, and I could sit there and listen to that, you know, and just listen to whatever.
And now you
podcast.
Have to work
now
for
I have
a
to work, yeah.
Which is horrible. Okay, so Boo-Ray, let's wrap this up on a wedding topic just so we can finish it up.
All right.
Advice for young photographers entering the wedding market. What's your five takeaways that they need to learn or be aware of? Obviously, we talked about backups.
Backups is one.
Okay. Four more.
Number two is that being a really good photographer is not going to give you a career.
Ooh.
That you have to be able to sell yourself. Because there are so many really good photographers, the world is not going to be a path to your door. So just saying, I'm just going to be so good, I'm going to get so much work. No, you have to be prepared to go get the clients. You have to be prepared to sell yourself. When they get in the room, you got to be prepared to talk to them and convince them that you are the guy that they want to have. You know, so that's a big one. It's much better to be liked than it is to be good.
Oh, okay, that's definitely going to be the title right there.
I'm the living proof of that. I don't get people. People don't come around. Well, I get a few people like, oh, I love your work, but not, you know, no one's following me because of my work. You know, my work is good, but it's not stellar. It's not unbelievable, but it's good. You know, it's good enough. And people like me, well, hopefully. And that's, and that's what gets me the business.
Okay.
So
come on.
That's always important to know.
Three more to go. We're on three.
I just can't stress the importance of backups. Other good advice for top five things. It's funny. I was just on a webcast and I actually had this very, the whole webcast was about this. Now I can't remember
what I had five notes and I can't remember what they are.
I can't remember what the five things were, but I can't stress that one enough.
So selling yourself.
You've got to be prepared to sell yourself.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, I say, I'm a bread and butter photographer, but people follow me because they like me. You know, I can create a sellable image.
They're going to be clean. Mm-hmm. They're going to be lit well. They're going to be proper color, proper exposure. I'm going to put some artistry into it, sure. But what I'm really going to give you is something that 20 years from now, you're not going to look at it and go, oh my God, look at those pictures from 2020. Those are so, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to give you the crazy filter pictures. I'm not going to go with what's in vogue or cool right now because it's not going to be cool 5 or 10 years from now. I'm going to give you something that never gets, never becomes uncool. And that's proper color, proper light, good posing if you need it. You know, that sort of thing. So that's who I am. And then I do some, you know, stylish stuff too, but it's such a small part of a wedding. That's another thing. If you want to be a wedding photographer, you're going to concentrate a lot on the marquee images, but do not neglect all the other images from the day. Because when you're going through the images, and you know this, I'm sure, Robert, you're going through the images with your client afterwards, that picture you shot where you put them in front of the sunset and you lit it with off-camera light and the veil is flying and you did all this stuff, you spent all this time, that picture comes up and they go, oh, that's beautiful. What's next? Yeah. And then the picture comes up where you just happen to get a moment, you know, something real or somebody doing something goofy, and that's the one they laugh about and then tell you a story about how that person is blah, 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 blah. That image as important or more important than that beautiful off-camera lighting dress shot that you did.
That's absolutely correct all the time. You'll make a capture that has a story that you're not aware of.
Yes.
And they will tell you what that story is, and they make an emotional connection to the image that you captured, not knowing what the story was when you captured it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So know how to shoot the detail. You got to be able to do it all. You got to be able to shoot the details. You got to be able to shoot the candids. You got to be able to shoot the ceremony. You got to know where to stand and when to stand there. I mean, I think about the early weddings that I shot and I'm like, oh, I'm so embarrassed to think about where I was standing or trying to get a shot, when now I know that you go here, then here, then here, then here. This is how you do it. And then, one thing I would say is albums. You absolutely got to sell albums. I mean, it can be a third of your money. It can be half your money, mm-hmm. You know, and the trick to selling albums is to explain people that they need the album. You know, it's like I tell people, I'm one of the few people who sell something that actually increases in value. You know, you buy a car, you drive it off the lot, and then immediately it loses 20% of its value. But an album increases in value. I'm going to give you this album today, and then 10 years from now, I'm going to come to you, and I'm going to offer you twice what you paid for it. Are you going to let me have that album? No.
No.
And 30 years from now or 40 years from now, if I come to your children or your grandchildren, and I ask them for that album, and I say, I'll give you $10,000 for your grandparents' wedding album, do you think they're going to sell it to me?
No. Not going to happen.
See, buying a wedding album is an investment. It's an investment in your future. It's an heirloom. It gets passed down from generation to generation. This is what your children will fight about when you die.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know. And again, this has nothing to do with my abilities as a photographer. This is all my ability to sell. And it helps if you believe it. And I do. I absolutely believe it.
Yeah, there's, you know, I believe
that albums are important.
It's because, not going to go out of date.
And here's another thing I do. How much time were we over? Here's another thing I do that I say that other people don't say. Everyone talks about the importance of printing.
Mm-hmm.
And they always, and they like to say that printing is so important because what if you lose the files or they get corrupted, or what if the file format changes? Like, we don't do 8-tracks anymore. And I hate that argument because that's just stupid. Because every photographer in the country, he keeps his files. He doesn't keep the prints. He keeps his files. We all keep our files. So we don't all think that files are stupid. We love files and we keep the files. I think it's exactly the opposite. The reason that you want to print, the reason that you want an album, is because you have the files. If you look at all the pictures that my children take and all the pictures that I take, and they all get backed up to the cloud, and then my children's children will do it, and my children's children's children will do it, by the time we get to your grandchildren, if everything is saved and nothing is lost, your grandchildren will have somewhere an archive of millions of pictures from their life, their parents' lives, their grandparents' lives, etc. They are never going to see your wedding pictures.
That is true.
You are going to be lost to history. But if they have an album, an heirloom that was passed down to them, generation to generation, that's precious. They're going to connect with you. They're going to know who you are. Your great grandkids will know who you are. Your great, great, great grandkids will know who you are because of this album, not because of the files that I'm going to give you.
Okay. So let me turn this around just a little bit, because I'm with you. I believe what you're saying. So I want, this is one thing that comes up a lot in conversation with Jim and I. As a photographer, you know, especially the digital, okay, we've been taking digital. Right now on my backup system at home, I have approximately 22 terabytes of information. I can go back to every image I photographed since 2009. Okay? This is my fear. My fear is that when I die, my kids will look at my computer and go, hey, I want Dad's computer. And in a quick format, wipe out all of the images and historical data I have taken over my recent life.
You're talking about images of clients, not your family.
Correct. All, but everything. I keep everything. I have all of my iPhone photos backed up. I have all of my images I've shot for clients. I've had personal projects. Everything will go up in smoke immediately.
Right. So make albums for your family. That's what I do.
Correct.
I make an album for my wife gets an album every year for Christmas.
The albums
of the family photograph, the best family photographs from the year.
The albums can be seen.
Yeah.
What the file on your computer, no one wants to dig through that, and it's easy to just delete it and it's gone.
You're saying the same thing. Either argument works the same.
But you know, as photographers,
both arguments work fantastically. You know, yes, you should print because you could lose the file or the file could be gone. Yes, but I don't think it's a sustainable argument that the photography industry has when they that they say you should print your pictures or put the print your pictures or put them on a wall. You should buy pictures for your wall because you could lose the digital file. They show like some old picture from the Civil War and they'll say, well, it's a good thing this wasn't on a hard drive somewhere. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That picture looks like crap. It's been in the sun for 120 years. If I had the digital file from that image, it would be perfect.
I'd make a new one.
You know, you act like saving a piece of wall art for 50 years is easy. Yeah, easier than saving a file that you can put in the cloud. It's not.
Okay,
you know, so that's what I hate about that argument is the people who say that prints, not necessarily albums, but prints are the only way to preserve your photographs. I'm like, no, prints are great and they have uses, but files, let's keep the files too.
So this is my challenge to you, counselor.
Counselor?
Yes, counselor. So here's my challenge, because I really highly, I like to put another plug in for the PPA. I've been a PPA member for many years. And I really believe in the organization. And
PPA
I was
changed
even
my life.
I what?
It changed,
PPA changed my life.
Oh, changed. I thought it said you saved your life. I was like, wow.
No, they changed my life. Well, in some ways they did. I can't imagine what my life would be today if I wasn't involved in the Tampa Area Professional Photographers Association, the Florida Photographers Association, and the Professional Photographers Association of America. Every friend I have comes to me through these organizations. Including you, Robert. I met you, Robert, Jim. I met both of you because I spoke at Imaging USA and you guys were interviewing all the speakers.
Yes.
And I was on your podcast the first time. That's how I met you. Had it not been for the PPA.
True. You are correct, because we actually did that like right outside your classroom.
No, you interviewed me on the phone.
Yeah. It was on the phone? On the Google
Hangout. And then you interviewed me and Gary at Imaging USA year or two later.
You're correct.
Right.
So here's my plan. This is one thing.
Love that one. But I've listened to that, by the way, that podcast of us being on your show. I listened to that thing probably a dozen times
in
the year after we did it.
Yeah.
I loved that podcast.
Yeah. Because you guys know how horrified I was at the very beginning of that.
Why?
Oh, could we drop more F-bombs to that thing than we did?
It was definitely
concert.
Explicit.
Yeah, I love that.
All right, so this is what I want to propose to you, because this is one thing I'd love to have the PPA take care of. I feel that as a photographer, we are history gatherers and we're time travelers. And I would like the PPA as a nonprofit photographers organization to come up with an online iCloud backup system for its members. okay, so that we could actually pay the PPA instead of paying another like back blaze, carbon, whatever it is, to back up our images so that we are doing our due diligence with our clients, backing up our images under a caveat.
I'll tell you, first of all, I have no power whatsoever in the PPA.
No, you don't, but you have
a
voice.
I have no way to make this happen, but I'll tell you this. I have thought about what if I ever was on the board of directors. You know, what are some of the projects that I would like to try and see the PPA do? And that's absolutely one of them. You're not telling me anything I haven't. I'm just saying that's a great idea. I know because I had it myself.
But here's the twist.
Because you're always thinking, what can the PPA do to give more value to their members? I mean, they already, I mean, you can get your insurance through the PPA. You have the indemnity trust, which protects you if you get sued. They just had the thing where if you're a PPA member and you need data recovery,
Yes. They've had that for a while.
It's a $200 deductible. Have you ever tried to get to get your data recovered? It's usually like $1,000.
Well, we interviewed Data Savers, which is the partner. There you go.
So that's a great deal. And then, of course, there's the convention and there's all the online resources. And I mean, they already offer so much, which is why they're the largest in the world. But, you know, you're always looking for what are the ways that we can add more. Because remember, the PPA is a member-run nonprofit organization. It's like the Moose Lodge or the Elks Lodge. It's not, you know, it's just
without the hats. Run.
And that was one of the things I thought was if I was trying to look for more things we could do, that online storage and backup of your files is a thing that every photographer has to deal with.
Right, but this is what I want. This is what I would like as a photographer.
Speak it.
What I want is that to be offered at a discount for its members, okay? Mm-hmm. In exchange for, upon my death, I would transfer the copyright to the PPA to be my images to be used however they see fit. So they do not disappear. Because right now, if I die and my bills don't get paid in that first or second month, one click on my online backup, it's gone. One format on my hard drive with my kids and everything that I have worked on, if it's not printed, it's gone.
When you have the problem that, I mean, you want your kids to get the copyright first.
My kids don't care about it, and that could be in a contract. What I don't want the history. All the photograph I have taken, we don't know what the future is. You don't have no idea if on my hard drive is the photos of the person that got married that solved cancer or traveled to Pluto or Saturn or, you know, discovered something that is amazing. But everything I have is catalog. It's keyword. You could find it on my system. I can find any image in 10 minutes or less. And I would love to have my system available to whoever is interested in having it after I'm gone. I would love to have a safeguard so that all my work doesn't disappear.
You're the first person to ever express to me this fear and concern.
Yes, because I realized, and a long time ago as a photographer, that my job is a part documentary and seer of history. The history that we have of the world right now is being viewed because we have so much visual images. We don't know what the Egyptians really did. We don't know what happened really in the Middle Ages.
I'm devil's advocate, but don't you also think that because everyone's got a phone and a camera in their pocket, that the value of your images as historical documents is reduced?
No.
Because even if all of your images from that wedding go away, there's still all of the images of that wedding that were shot by all the phones that were there.
Okay, so let's go back to the phone thing. You have teenagers, or had teenagers.
No. Right. Okay. Do I still
do? Yeah, he does.
He still has them. Okay. I have a teenage daughter, Shannon. Love her to death. She's my duck. She wakes up in a new world every day. She takes hundreds, if not thousands, of photos on her phone. And she busts her phone all the time. And I'm like, hey, well, before you get your new phone, do you want to back up your stuff? Nah, it's not important. Because the generation today does not. It's so easy to capture them on the phone. They have so less value to them in the future.
Yeah, but don't her images get backed up to Apple Cloud automatically?
Yeah, but she doesn't care about them. So right. if she forgets to put it up, or if it doesn't do a backup, or her phone gets filled, she just goes in and deletes the files.
Because you can't convince them how important. Oh, what I wouldn't give to have had access to a phone when I was 13 and oh my have God, those pictures absolutely. Today. Yeah. The friends that I had when I was 13 and the things that I did, the clothes that I wore. I've often said that wouldn't you love if your parents had just gone and taken a picture of your room every year of your life?
Oh my God, that would be so crazy.
Oh yeah.
If you could see that, if you could see your room when you were 11, how many things do you think you would see on the floor and on the shelves that you've forgotten about? And then when you saw them, you're like, oh my God, yes, that model. I remember making that model. I forgot I had that model.
That's
or that
crazy.
Toy or that comic poster. Book or that, you know what I mean? Stuff is important.
That's crazy you say that. I was just telling my son about that, my 10-year-old. I told him all these models I had. I had numerous, like 20 or 30 models hanging on the wall, and I was trying to find that picture so I could show them to him, but I can't find it anywhere. But, exactly right.
It's stuff is important. I really realized that at Christmas one year with my wife, and her sister were going through an album, and they found a picture of their room. And they just, I mean, they laughed and just cried looking at the pictures and pointing at stuff and going, oh my God, Purple Pie Man. Do you remember Purple Pie Man? How important Purple Pie Man was. And remember the time we got in the fight? You remember that? And I was like, oh wow, stuff is important. And after that, I started taking pictures of my kids' rooms.
Oh
my God, that's crazy. Okay, we got to wrap it up, Blu-ray. That was, once we got to your rooms, that was it. That was the final, that was the final straw. It was excellent talking to you today. We really appreciate your time.
Oh,
it was nice to be on a podcast where I actually talk about photography.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's see what Gary has to talk about when he comes on.
Yeah, we're going to have Gary Hughes on here on the 29th. We're going to record it on the 29th. It'll probably come out that evening or the next morning. But, yeah, it's Blu-ray's other half.
Hey, you guys listen to us a lot. Yeah, let me ask you a question. I know we got to go. But
no,
let me ask
go
you a
ahead.
Question.
Go ahead.
If you interviewing Gary, interviewing me, and knowing us, would you have guessed that we would work together as a team?
No.
The two of you?
No.
Yeah.
Like not even, no.
No, probably not.
Why?
You guys both have such different personalities. And
see, that's, I don't know.
But
I wonder, do people think we have different personalities? I have no idea.
But I mean, that's what makes a marriage great is opposites, you know?
Right. My wife is nothing like me.
No, okay. Yeah, exactly.
I think Gary is more technical than Blu-ray.
Yes.
Yeah. Extremely more technical.
Right.
Blu-ray is looking at the world at a 30,000 altitude, and Gary's walking the city blocks.
Okay.
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 And it's not a bad thing or a good thing.
No, just not an L thing. There's some things I'm absolutely in the details.
Right.
But you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah,
and
Gary's
he is
much more
really picky
I'm more
about
big picture.
Specs. Yeah, you're more big picture. He's more small picture. And it's not a bad or a good thing, but just two different things. And it's very complimentary on a show.
Yeah.
But when you say, hey, yeah, we've done jobs together or we've done whatever together, I think that you have a connection on a personal level more so than a professional level.
You might be right about that. Yeah,
and I think that's why your podcast
works. Most of the time
when
we talk, we're not necessarily talking about photography.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
Because the connection is personal.
Right.
It's a deeper friendship where Jim and I started at the professional level and then grew into a personal friendship.
Right. Gary and I started on a personal level.
And then
we met as photographers, but we decided to podcast because we were sitting at the bar at a convention and we weren't talking about photography at all. And we were enjoying it so much that Gary was like, we should do a podcast.
Exactly.
And I said, no, absolutely not. I'm not doing a podcast. And then he wore me down.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good. All right. We're going to go ahead and cut off. Stay on the line, Blu-ray, so we can say our proper goodbyes. And, this is B. Aaron on Father's Day. So, Blu-ray, happy Father's Day.
All right. Don't forget, you can check out my podcast. It's called Photobomb. Anywhere podcasts are found. I have a group on Facebook called Pro Photo Talk with Blu-ray Perry, and I'm on YouTube as Blu-ray Perry.
Awesome.
Yes. Yeah, so, if you're a Fuji lover, be sure to check out his YouTube channel.
Yeah.
It's or anything. Amazing. I mean, I have why I use these flashes, what lenses I use for weddings, all that stuff's on there.
Yeah, but we don't really watch that. We just watch the Fuji stuff.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, appreciate it. Talk to you soon. All right.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can find Jim at jimfelder.com and Robert at treywickimages.com. Send us an email at twins@photofaxpodcast.com or voicemail at 405-585-6337.
Check out our YouTube PhotoFax channel for weekly tips and tricks. Visit our Facebook page for news and discussion. Please help others find this podcast by reviewing us on iTunes. We really appreciate your support.